The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Welcome to The Parents Show. I'm Vivian Glass, and this evening we're continuing with our Talking Heads series, where we get to know the head teachers of our local schools a little bit better. Joining me this evening is Miss Emma Fenn of Redbourne Primary School. Welcome to the show, Emma.
Thank you for having me today.
You're most welcome. Emma, can you tell us a little bit about Redbourne Primary School and a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been the head teacher here for 4 years. I've been a head teacher about 15 years in total. So this is my second school and it is a large school. So we are a two-form entry primary school with a nursery. So we have about 400 children. We have about 65 staff and a glorious site in the middle of Redbourne. We're the only primary school in Redbourne. And the site offers lots of opportunities for the children. And we were formerly an infant and a junior school that amalgamated in 2018. So we've got lots of facilities, such as two kitchens, two dining halls, two playgrounds, because we were formerly two separate schools, but we're now united on one site.
Oh, fantastic. And has that change, has it affected how the school runs or the atmosphere of the school, do you think?
I think in the amalgamation in 2018, the senior leadership team at the time worked really hard to make sure it was a smooth transition for everybody. In the time that I've been here since 2021, there's a real community feel and the infants and the juniors are close by. It is the family school and I feel that we've made the most of the large site. It's a very secure site. That was one of the first things that I did when I joined because I had such a large school with so many children. And I wanted to utilise the school site, actually just making sure all my safeguarding arrangements in place were top notch, just to make sure that that was my priority.
So you're a village school. Redbourne's obviously a reasonable size village between St Albans and Harpenden and I suppose Hemel as well, that sort of triangular spot, but quite a large school. What's the sort of options for children there in terms of the offering from a point of view of extracurriculum activities? Do you have much that goes on out with the school as well, with the community?
Yes, we have clubs that we run ourselves, such as recorder and choir and netball and chess. And then we have hirers who run breakfast clubs. We've got dodgeball and chess. We also have our own early morning club. So we've got wraparound care for families. That starts from 7:45. So for a working parent, there are clubs in the morning or childcare. And then after school, we have our own after school club. So there's childcare provision till 6. But we also have a wide range of after school clubs. And then we have external providers running sporting clubs, robotics club. So there's clubs on every night after school till about 4:30. And then children can go to the wraparound care provision as well. And being in Redbourne, the majority of our Redbourne families walk to school and it's lovely that they can come to a large village school. But we also have families from Hemel and St Albans and Harpenden and some of the outlying villages as well, which is great. So it's a real community feel here.
Fabulous. And what's been the thing that you have been most proud of since you've taken on the role as head teacher?
It's been a journey. When I first became the head teacher, I think you want to establish yourself as the head teacher, but you want to get to know everybody as quickly as possible. And we were a school that had the amalgamation in 2018 and then COVID had struck. And actually the school was still moving into its new primary school status. So I think for me, I'm really proud of the staff and the children. When I joined, it's having high expectations for the staff, for the children. And we were on a journey with regards to our statutory assessments to make sure our children were having a rich curriculum. They were able to move on to secondary school in line with their peers. And I don't want to be all about Ofsted, but actually, you know, in March this year, we had Ofsted and we were graded good in all areas, which is wonderful. because the amalgamation had come about because actually the schools had been at different stages in their sort of development over time. And my first inspection in 2022, although we were judged good in three of the Ofsted areas, we were required improvement overall. So for me, I feel very proud today because within this fourth year of headship, actually this school has come a long way. It's amalgamated the junior school closed, the infant school extended by a key stage. And then in my tenure here, we have been recognised as a good school in all areas. And the staff and the children feel that this is a school where they love learning and look forward to coming to school every day. And hopefully that Ofsted recognition lets the community know the journey we've been on and what we're going to do next.
What were the biggest challenges, Emma, in achieving that good status overall? Because that's obviously quite a big undertaking.
Yes, it is. I mean, when I look back, the junior school hadn't been graded as good for nearly a decade. So actually, that is a large amount of time. The infant school had more successful gradings more recently. I think with anything, it's about high expectation, and that if behaviour is a barrier to learning, that's really difficult to have successes within the classroom for all children. So we really focused on behaviour in my first year, and then we looked at curriculum. Because I'm a two-form entry school, I've got up to 60 children in each year group. Something that we implemented, which actually can be difficult to bring about change, but actually was really positive. We mix the children every September. So the two year six classes or the two year five classes, they will have a new group of 30 children in each class. And it has really helped the children not just see themselves as being in a class of 30 and they're with those children for the next 7 years. They are in a class where we've tried to reduce any barriers to learning, have a good mix of all different factors. And the children have got a fresh start every year, a new group of children to be with, a new teacher and support staff. And actually, that's been really positive for us. So that's something that we're continuing with. When you're a one-form entry school, you haven't got that flexibility. And sometimes I've seen, you know, when I was a head teacher before coming to Redbourne, sometimes the children have been with the same child for up to 7 years and they're ready for a fresh start, whereas a larger school does give much more flexibility.
Sure. So they can redefine themselves as well within their peer group and, you know, set about a new strategy perhaps each year for how they're going to engage if perhaps the previous year hasn't been so successful for them. Or
yeah, and friendship groups also develop and widen. And I think that's great for transition into secondary school. And in Redbourne, we are quite fortunate that the majority of our children will go to secondary school in Harpenden. Some do go to school in Hemel. And our children do need to learn to be resilient. And we hope that by having the class mixing, actually our children are going to be well prepared for that next journey in their education life.
One question that we're asking all our head teachers in this series, Emma, is about discipline, because obviously you touched on it there about behaviour. How are you making that work today for today's children?
And it's becoming more and more difficult to get it right for all children. And we do make reasonable adjustments for our children with special educational needs. I do go back to high expectations. We have something called golden rules. So we try to make sure that all our children understand and can access so that we're gentle, we're kind and helpful. I've spoken to a few children this morning and just been reminding them of those golden rules. And sometimes for some of our children, that is enough, a reminder. We work really closely with parents, and the parent body at Redbourne are very supportive. And we try to keep parents in the loop. So we don't want parents to find out via children. So we like to be proactive with our communication. We are a therapeutic thinking school. So we are trying to make sure that we have discussions with the children. We're trying to make sure that they understand about different choices that they could make next time. And we want to make sure that a child will understand what is expected of them. And we want children to know that there's always a fresh start. You know, children sometimes adults make bad choices at times. And actually, we do not want to punish the children. There sometimes would be a consequence, but actually, we hope that a restorative conversation with the relevant member of staff will actually be enough to help that child make a better choice next time. So it's a mixture of this therapeutic thinking, steps approach, but also staff knowing the children, working with the parents, and consistency of approach, I think, is really important. So again, consistency is something that we've really focused on. So as the children move through the school, it's not new every year. And some of our classes do have job share teachers. And so we've tried to ensure that we've got consistency of approach within classes, within year groups, within phases, within the school, but at an age appropriate level.
And you touched there on special needs. What sort of provisions are you able to make for those that need a little bit of extra help in the classroom?
We're really fortunate to have a very experienced special educational needs coordinator, short SENCO, and she's part of the senior leadership team. Her name's Mrs. North, and that means that the driving force of the school has special educational needs at the forefront of our mind because she sits within the senior leadership team. She's also the staff governor. So when we are making strategic decisions as a school, we are thinking about all of our children. One of the benefits of formerly being two school sites is that we've got lots of additional space. So not only these two dining rooms and two kitchens that I've spoken about, that does make lunchtime a lot easier with 400 children because I can feed everybody within 12 till 1, which is wonderful. But we've also got former libraries or former head teacher offices. So we've been able to create some breakout space for some of our children that might need to de-escalate or just might need some time. And that's wonderful. So large classrooms, we've got very skilled teaching assistants and learning support assistants so that we can support within the classroom, but we can also provide some one-to-one support. And then we've got a little breakout space for when that one-to-one time is needed. And then ideally, the children are being integrated back into the classrooms. And we're always keen for parents to come and have a tour of the school. So if any parents are interested, as head teacher, I always deliver the tours. I want parents to meet me to understand the school ethos and the values and our expectations. You know, school is every day attending and always the dreaded holiday and term time conversations to be had. So it's better to lay all that out at the outset. And I like to give a tour of the school to see the facilities. But when you go into a classroom, it's hard to tell who's the teacher, who's the teaching assistant, who's the learning support assistant. They work really well together, moving around the classroom to meet the needs of the children as they need. And we've worked really hard to make sure that when we deliver training to teachers, we're also delivering that training to our special educational needs support staff as well. And we hope that that helps provide the reasonable adjustments that we want to make for them.
You touched there as well on physical space. It's quite an important factor, actually, for growing people, but something that's sometimes a bit of a luxury. Does that make a difference in terms of play times, in terms of the playground facilities that you have as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's wonderful. And for anyone that wants to come and have a tour, do see the website. But there's a great playground for our early years children that's really secure for them, and for our Key Stage 1 children, fields that are accessible to Key Stage 1, Key Stage 2, and we call it a family section. So if the younger children would like to be with the older children and vice versa, they can be together. So we're able to run play times either staggered or at the same time. I do think it's important to run the lunch hour collectively because then the staff can see each other as well. And I want the staff to see themselves as a primary school, not as a separate infant and junior. So it is a real luxury. We host the annual Rounders tournament here at school because we've got such a large, flat, always bonus field. So we're able to have four Rounders pitches at the same time. So that took place last Wednesday and we invited the local primary schools over. And yeah, just having that flexibility of space is wonderful. We also have a previous classroom that we use for our after school childcare. So the space is available for those children all year round, rather than actually having to use somebody else's classroom. So it is a designated space for that after-school provision. And having two school halls means that we can maximise the after-school clubs, or also at Christmas when we're doing productions, sometimes we might have the infant production in the junior hall to maximise the number of parents that can come to watch. And we're just able to have more flexibility.
When you talked about the Senkel member of staff there also being a governor, does that have any sort of positive impacts perhaps on how funding can be distributed or accessed throughout the school as well, perhaps to support those with educational needs?
Funding is always tight. We would always like more money coming in. Our Senko is very experienced with putting in applications for educational healthcare plans. And the applications are really important, not only to meet the child's needs, but then to secure funding to be able to staff the child's requirements laid out in the EHCP. Whether her role as a governor or not links to the funding, probably not directly, but it does keep the governing board very up to date with where we are as a school and what our needs are. And I know that working with the school business manager, we're making sure that we are in the best possible position to either make the applications or to receive any grants. Not linked to special educational needs, but we've been very fortunate. The Redbourne Community Group, we've been successful with a grant, and they're going to provide a gazebo on the school grounds for all the children to benefit from. We also have a very hardworking PTA, and they organise wonderful community events, obviously summer fairs and Christmas events, but also events for the children. They love discos, and we also have ideas for half terms. It could be a scavenger hunt, or most recently, there are bricks in the staff room, and the children and adults were invited to make them into their favourite book cover, and they painted them. They're all unusual. So getting everybody involved. So everyone's working together. At the end of the day, we need as much money coming into schools as possible. We need as many children in schools as possible. And everybody's working together to secure any pot of money that is available.
I love the sound of the disco dancing. That sounds right up my street. Absolutely.
Yes, there's even talk of a silent disco next. So we're going to be thinking about trying that. So that was a good idea. We like to listen to the parents here at school. So we have a parent forum, and we also have a parent focus group. And the parent focus group meets termly, and there's different representatives from each year group. And they can come and talk to me openly about ideas, what's going well, what's not. But also all the class can complete a Google survey to give their input as well. And hopefully the parents feel that we are listening, and we are always thinking about ways in which we can make tweaks here and there to improve our offer.
Emma, in Harpenden, and St Albans, there's been quite a movement among, certainly in the secondary schools, but among the primary schools as well, around mobile phones, around the use of smartphones and technology. Is that something that's infiltrating from your parent body as well?
Yes, absolutely. Technology is moving really quickly. And mobile phones, you've got some children with something more similar to a brick, and you've got children with sort of mini computers in their pockets. And our parents have, at the start of the year, we had a really good discussion about mobile phones and going to secondary school. And we organised some parent workshops, and we also organised some children workshops for our families to help everybody feel informed. It's always a bit more difficult when you're in a village such as Redbourne, and a lot of our children will go to secondary school, maybe cycling down the Nicky line, or they might be getting the bus to go to secondary school. And we know that bus tickets are on mobile phones. So I think it's a difficult decision for village families to make as to the type of mobile phones that they're going to provide for their child. So what we try to do is help keep the children really informed about online safety. We've focused on informing parents to help them make informed decisions. And we also need to prepare our children for life without a mobile phone. you know, for when it goes flat, we've all got to know how to cope, haven't we, in those situations. So it definitely has been a conversation. Being in a village, it is a different discussion because the children have potentially further to travel and have to be more independent. And actually, that's got to be taken into account. A lot of our children do not get a mobile phone until maybe year 5 or year 6. And at school, we have policies in place regarding mobile phones.
Is your policy that, tell us a little bit about the policy on that for those children.
So when children are in year 5 or year 6, parents can give permission that a child can walk to or from school independently should they wish. And some of those families will want their child to have a mobile phone with them. So if the family wishes that, then the mobile phone must be turned off as soon as the child crosses the threshold onto the school grounds, and the mobile phone is given to the teacher for the entirety of the day, and the teacher returns it at the end of the day, and it doesn't go on until they're off the school site. And that works well for where we are in our village, because obviously the majority of our children are in walking distance. I think the thing that parents need to be thinking about is the type of phone that their child has. And that isn't covered in my policy, but a lot of the advice is making sure that the children have the training to use the technology, and actually that the phone provides the ability to do what that child needs and maybe nothing more. And I know that our parents are thinking long and hard about that.
Fantastic. And yes, you've made a good point there about that village location, and it does change rather the point of view perhaps on these things. In terms of in the classroom, are you a techie school? Is it tablets or is it books or is it a blend of both? How do you sit on that?
So I was in a really fortunate position when I joined the school. As I mentioned, the PTA were very active. So one of the things I mentioned, my sort of priority was fences, first of all, so make the site nice and safe. And the PTA were willing to work towards fundraising for Chromebooks. So actually, we very quickly resourced the junior school with Chromebooks. In each year group, they've got a set of 30 Chromebooks, so children don't need to share devices. And we have, over the last few years, been filtering then the Chromebooks or iPads into Key Stage 1. So we are fully resourced, and the school had already had interactive whiteboards. We also like visualizers so that the teachers can show the children's learning via the visualizer onto the whiteboard, can demonstrate writing and edits, or share a text. So we like to feel we are really well resourced, funded by that PTA. We've also really worked heavily on developing our curriculum, especially in English. We had initially started on maths in my first year, and then we've moved on to a new literacy scheme, and it focuses on high quality text. So again, the PTA have been very supportive in funding sets of these really engaging and much more diverse selection of books for each year group. So as we're trying to develop our curriculum offer, we're also trying to entice the children into a love of reading. And in turn, that will actually prepare them for later life. So the technology, but alongside high quality reading materials for the children that they're using in conjunction with each other.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for telling us all about the primary school, Emma. Is there anything that's coming up? Obviously, we're moving through summer. We're moving through into the next academic year. Anything that parents should be looking out for from Redbourne that they might be able to participate with, or where they might be able to find out a bit more information?
Yes, I mean, just thinking ahead, our school open evening is on the 10th of July, and that's 5 till 6:30. And anybody in the community is welcome to come along. All the classrooms will be open and a work displayed. And there'll also be a performance by the choir, the recorder group, and maypole dancing. We do like the village tradition of maypole dancing. We are a school where we have our own nursery. So if families are thinking about reception for September or nursery or an in-year admission. We do have spaces available. So our school website, Redbourne Primary School, is a very good place to look on the admissions page or to see what's happening. But a very warm welcome to our open evening on the 10th of July.
Lovely. And just to finish off, Emma, can you tell us, just to let us know a little bit more about you, what's your favourite thing to do at the end of your school day when you've been busy looking after all these children? What do you love to do most?
Well, take my shoes off. I think they're currently off at this moment in time, actually, due to the heat. I have three dogs myself. So when I get home, I like to take my dogs out. I've got a lovely park near where I live and walk the dogs. And especially in this lovely sunshine, I think that's a really nice way for me to unwind after the school day. It's a busy time here at school. Sports day on Friday. So that will keep me busy. And yes, spending time outside, especially in the sunshine. I like to enjoy reading and planning my holiday getaway when I can have a little bit of downtime.
And it sounds like that's very, very well earned, Emma. You've certainly been a busy, busy lady over the past few years, and it sounds like nothing's slowing down for you. You're on full throttle with Redbourne Primary. Thank you so much for your time and for joining us on the Parents Show.
Now, I've been really pleased to be here today. It's been lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Emma.
We'll take a quick break now on the Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Thanks for joining us again on the Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Emma Smith from Raiden Solicitors here in St Albans. And they are, of course, sponsors of the Parents Show, we are delighted to say. And she's a solicitor there. Emma, thank you so much for joining us on the Parents Show today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we're going to talk to you a little bit about law as a career. So we're going to pick your brains, Emma, over the next 15, 20 minutes and just find out all about it, if that's all right. So first of all, tell us about your journey into law and what drew you to it.
So my journey into law was much more unconventional to the traditional route. I actually got a bachelor's degree in history before I did even entered the legal world. This was just because when I was doing my A-levels, it didn't even cross my mind to study law. I'd seen lawyers in media and everything else, and they just seemed so intelligent and everything else.
I can relate.
I was just like, that doesn't seem like it'd be for me. So it was only after I finished my degree and I went into the working world, I got a job through a connection at a pub I was working at as a legal secretary in a local law firm. And I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Worked in civil litigation team. And I thought I really want more hands-on involvement in the cases. And the way to do that was to become a solicitor myself. So I applied and got onto the graduate diploma in law. And I studied that for 2 years part-time whilst full-time working as a legal secretary. And then halfway through that course is when I actually joined Raiden Solicitors as a paralegal. So I actually took a step up in my career whilst I was studying, which is a real benefit of law, that you can do that. You can sort of progress yourself as you're studying at the same time. I then did the legal practice course part-time whilst full-time working. And during that time, I also progressed to the training contract, which is when you're a trainee solicitor. So there was still that career progression happening at the same time as my studying. So it really does mean that it's accessible to people who've already got a degree. It's an option if you've got a career change. And I just found that law really made me tick. If you like a challenge and like work to not always be the same every single day, it's fantastic. It takes dedication, but it's worth it for how rewarding it is as a career. That would be my key thing that has kept me interested in it.
But that what a fantastic way to get into it. I wouldn't have thought that that was a possibility. So in total, how many years has it taken you to get where you are now?
So I started my bachelor's degree when I was 18. So from my bachelor's degree in history, starting that, I would say it's about 7 years to qualification because I qualified in 2023. I don't know if my maths are quite right from that. That's quick maths. Yeah, so 2018 to 2023 was when I qualified, September 2023. So it's a pretty clean, straight amount of years.
And the great thing about it is you got to explore the route that you intuitively thought you were going to go around, but then it didn't rule out law and you could come back to it. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, so I got to do a degree in an area that really interests me. Like, I love history. I would never change the path I had because doing a history degree was great. I loved it. And I would say if there's anyone in their A-levels that even is considering law but isn't certain, there's no harm in considering doing something that you really enjoy now and then revisiting law in the future. It just makes the journey a little bit longer. So if you're absolutely certain that you want to do law, just go for it.
Yeah. But if you're not, like you say, and it's funny because you think you're a type to be a lawyer or not, like you said, but to find out it really is the passion, it's the thing you were looking for, is fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when I got into family law, it just clicked even more. Because I'd enjoyed civil litigation and what I saw of that as legal secretary, but the work as a family lawyer is much more personal. It's much more emotion. And I think if you're quite an empathetic person and what makes you tick is helping people through a hard time and seeing them out the other side, family law is great for that because that is literally what you are doing. You're taking on clients in a tough time in their life and you're helping them get through a process and advise them during a process. And then you get them to the other side and they come out the other side better off. You know, like that's what you're aiming to achieve. And that's really, really rewarding if that's something that interests you. And yeah, that's my, it's what brought me into family law and has kept me interested as well.
Fantastic. And I think you've juxtapose two lovely ideas that are not conventionally put together, which is empathy and law. And I think that's not conventionally what people put together with law, but it's beautiful that there's a humanity. You're bringing out the human side and the value in where the law comes in as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely where family law sort of shines for people. If you're that kind of person, you've gone into law, it's like it's something clicks. And I think every family lawyer I've met is extremely passionate about family law because they've been in law and then they've gone into family law and it's just been a passion for them to do that work. Yeah.
And so it sounds like professionally it's really fulfilling your expectations, maybe even exceeding them.
Yeah, definitely. It's intellectually challenging, which is what I want because I like being challenged. Every day I'm challenged with new cases that is different from the last case I brought and had on my case list, and so it just keeps me learning and developing constantly, which when you're that kind of personality that thrives off that, it's perfect. And the rewarding part is when you get to witness the relief and sort of the optimism of your clients by the time you get to the other end of their case and they can see the future and they can see it'll be okay and you sort of let them go off into the sunset. It's great.
Lovely. And do you think it's been a difficult route to choose? Was it a slog at times?
Yeah, I would say it wasn't difficult to choose to go into law because I think if once you get there, you're there like, yes, I definitely want to do this. But the actual studying and the working is a challenge. It's a balance, especially if you're doing it the way I did it, part-time study with full-time working. It is balancing your own well-being with studying, with a very intense job, really. Law is intense. There's no really way around it. It's why a lot of lawyers are very passionate about their work, because you have to have that passion to get through the study and everything else. And it's something you really would have to want to do. And it does take grit and determination, and support of family is also very important. But yes, I would say don't be put off by the amount of work that it is to get into law. If it's something that you really want to do, just get through it because it's worth it. It's a lot of work, but it's worth it.
A lot of work, but it's worth it. That's what I think. I just have this mental image of these huge books that you've got to learn off by heart to get there, but it's worth it.
It is worth it. And there's some great courses out there for training and everything else. And I think definitely, it's worth it.
Brilliant. And if listeners, I could imagine, you know, everybody, all parents, I mean, or the vast majority of parents would love their children to become lawyers. Is a law degree the way to go? Is that the route?
So if you're in your A-levels and you're certain you want to do law, go down that route. I think if that's what you really want to do. But if you're not sure, there's always options of doing work experience. If you're in your A-levels, we actually have a work experience scheme at Raidens Listers, and applications open in January 2026 for summer 2026 work experience, and you can apply for that through us. And that could be a way of testing if law is where you would like to go, if you're a bit unsure of what you want to do for your degree. So it's more straightforward to go straight into the traditional law degree, but otherwise, if you're not sure, go and find some experience, go and test yourself if you want to do it, and then you'll know, is probably my advice of that. And if you're still not sure, do something you love at university, and then you can always go back and change your mind. You've got a lot of time in your 20s to retrain.
Brilliant. Sound advice, Emma. And so, is anyone in your family a lawyer? Do you think it helps if you're thinking about law to know somebody who's a lawyer, to have a family background in law?
So I would say network is very important in law. It's well worth having contact. So if that contact comes from your family, that's a massive benefit. But I personally did not have any family members that were lawyers. No one knew how the process worked. It was a lot of research and sitting at the table and working out how to get into law. And I just so happened to have a contact through my fiance's family in law. So it was, and meeting a lady at the pub as well that I got on well with. It's speak to people, let them know that you're interested in law. There's lots of events as well that I know a lot of law firms do at the universities, and I know we have done careers fairs at Harts University, and we do them at schools in the local area. So go along to those and chat about your passion for law and how you get into it, and I'm sure they'll have lots of advice of networking ideas. And speaking to us at careers fairs itself is a networking activity, so just get involved with the law community. It's a big community and we're always welcoming.
Brilliant. It sounds like network helps, but if not, you can build your own network. And it sounds like serendipity and a bit of luck has a role to play too.
Yeah, definitely. It's put yourself out there.
Yeah.
If it's meant to be, it'll be.
Great stuff. Okie doke. And if there's, have you any tips for listeners who would like their children to enter law, or indeed themselves want to enter into law, maybe ready for a mid-career change?
So I would say applying for various work experience schemes. And if you can't get onto a work experience scheme, there's always the option of volunteering. Just get your foot in the door, because that's what really helped me. I got my foot in the door by helping a local law firm at first. I didn't get the legal secretary job straight away. That was given to me because I got my foot into the door at the law firm by doing their archiving work, which wasn't a full-time job or anything else, but it got me in the door and it built that network for me. And that is really important. To just don't expect to just walk into a training contract or whatever without doing the groundwork of getting your foot in the door, meeting people and everything else. And the earlier you start that, the better, is my advice, because it just puts you in really good stead to have that experience under your belt.
Brilliant. And it sounds like it's totally possible for adults too. I mean, if you're based, or your kind of basic degree isn't in law, there's every opportunity to start a new career. It feels like it's a thriving industry, and that there just aren't enough lawyers out there. So probably a good choice.
Yes. Yeah. So I was 22 when I considered law for the first time. So it's definitely not shut to people if you're over the age of 18. Yeah. It's a great industry, and it's becoming easier to qualify as well, because they've just recently changed the way that you qualify. So they've got the solicitor's qualifying examination now, which I didn't do personally because I wasn't qualifying at the time that it came in. But I do know that others have now done it that are younger than me. And we've got a trainee at the moment who's doing it. And we interviewed her this morning myself. So there will be a podcast coming out on our Spotify interviewing her. So if you want to know more information about the solicitor's qualifying examination, you can log in to our Spotify and listen to that.
And that's Raiden Solicitor's Spotify account.
Yeah, that's our Spotify account. Yes. There's other routes as well, such as Silex qualification. So I don't know a lot about this, but we do have Katie Skinner at our firm, who's a senior associate, and she qualified using this route. And we've also done an interview with her on our Raiden Solicitor's podcast as well on Spotify. So that would be really informative if you want to know more about that. It's more practical, is my understanding. You're much more in the working world and then you do exams on the side. So yeah, it's lots of routes that you can take.
Absolutely. And tell us the name of that route as well. Did you say Silex?
Silex is the short form, but it's spelled C-I-L-E-X. So if you just Google that, you'll get all the information on it.
Fantastic. Or on Raiden Solicitor's Spotify.
Or on our podcast.
It sounds like there's a wealth of information there too.
Yeah. Yeah. We've done a few. So it's Legal. Legal Paths is the podcast. So yeah, it'll have a lot of information on there. If there's any extra questions you've got.
Brilliant. So Emma, it sounds like you've found your calling in applying the law, and it's applying law and becoming a solicitor. It's so refreshing and lovely to hear that it plays such an important role in your life.
Yes. Yeah. I feel very lucky to have found something that suits me so well. And I can only hope that people listening find similar success. Yeah, it's been lovely.
Brilliant. Oh, lovely to talk to you today, Emma. And thanks for joining us on The Parents Show.
Thanks very much. It's lovely to be here.
Emma Smith from Raiden Solicitors here in St Albans, sponsors of The Parents Show.
There's loads happening at St Albans Museums over the school holidays. Catherine Newley from St Albans Museums has been talking to Mixed Morning's Nick Hazel.
We've got plenty. We've got lots on over the summer holidays to keep everyone entertained. So the museum and gallery, we have an exhibition on at the moment called Firm Foundations, which looks at the history of St Albans School of Art. And the exhibition covers a whole range of different art media. And as a result, our events kind of reflect that. So we have printing workshop, we have a mixed media landscape workshop, we have still life, and we have a polymer clay workshop where people can make miniature fruits and flowers inspired by the exhibition.
Fantastic. And I just know you've got a host of other things going on, I'm sure, to keep us all occupied when we get bored during the summer holidays.
Yes. So actually, every Sunday throughout the summer holidays, we have a craftanoon on Sunday afternoons. So if anyone's looking for something to keep their kids entertained on from 1:30 on Sunday afternoons, you can just pop along. There's no need to book in advance. We also do Messy Mondays on Monday mornings. And that's for sort of early years, younger children to come along to. And the idea with that is that people can just get messy at our museum rather than in their own homes, which always proves to be quite popular. And then free every day, we have things going on. So we've got the exhibitions, Firm Foundations that I already mentioned. We have a new exhibition opening on the 18th of July that is called Generations, Stories of South Asian St Albans, which is going to be really colourful and bright. And there's a storytelling corner, lots of things for children to engage with. We've got a handling trolley so people can come in and handle real objects in the museum. We have dressing up, which is, again, very popular always. Colouring in and museum trails. So there's plenty of things going on. We also have a particular event happening on the 16th of August. It's a mini Mela, which is an Indian festival, which is going to have music and dance and activities for all ages.
That is a lot going on at the museum. What about down in Verulamium? What have we got there?
Yeah, so at Verulamium, we have lots of different activities that, again, are kind of drop in as and when you're available. So we have archaeology for families, and this is a lovely activity. We do blanket digs, so people can uncover layers of archaeology, but using blankets rather than soil. And alongside that, they can then record their finds as real archaeologists do, using a special form. We also have Roman soldiers visiting Verulamium. We've got three different Roman soldiers coming across the summer holidays, so you can ask them about their equipment and their lives and find out more about Roman Verulamium at the time. So they're happening, I can give you some dates. They're on the 30th of July and on the 7th, the 16th, the 21st, the 28th and the 31st of August. So they're there a lot. And then we've got daily events as well. So there's things going on every day if people want to come and visit us. Again, we've got handling objects. The Roman objects are always very popular. We have a Tessa Wheeler Museum Trail. Tessa Wheeler was one of the original excavators of Verulamium. So the reason that we have a museum is because she and her husband found quite a lot of the things that are on display. We've got dressing up and we've got colouring in. So there's lots to go on. At Verulamium, you do have to pay to get in, but we are, over the summer holidays, offering £1 entry using the Hearts card, which is available to families who have children who qualify for free school meals. So if anyone, any of your listeners are listening and that reflects them and they want to be able to come, they can look at the Hearts card website. If you search online for that, you can find it. And if they produce that card when they come to visit us, they can get in for £1 plus five members of their family. So it's a really lovely way of coming and accessing the museum.
That's really great. It's a great initiative there too. Fantastic things going on. Any favourites for you, Catherine, if you were picking one?
I mean, I would always say the Roman soldiers, because I just think you can ask them all sorts of interesting questions and see what their responses are. They often let you have a go at like holding their shields and their swords.
That's going to be popular with the kids.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Catherine, thank you so much for running us through some things when I'm bored, Mum, comes up that we can do at the two museums in St Albans. That's Catherine Newley. Catherine is the Audience Development Manager at St Albans Museums. Catherine, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Catherine Newley from St Albans Museums talking to Nick Hazel. You can find out more and get dates and times at stalbansmuseums.org.uk.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.